All right. So I got lab zero from most of you and her from those of you that were having issues. Those of you that are having issues, check your email for my responses and catch up with me. We'll figure out what's happening. I think I'm also still missing prereq forms from a few of you. I need to get those, even though they're late now and you're not going to get homework credit for them. I still need those, or Dr. Mack's going to yell at me. So make sure that I get that. If I don't get them from you, I'll probably bounce your message and let you know that I need it. We do have on the schedule, there's another lab that's due on Friday. I'm probably going to push that. I'll make the call after class today. You'll see we're finishing up chapter 2, the first 10 minutes today. There's a section in chapter 2 that we're going to plug in after today's lecture. So today we're going to talk about primarily state space representations. So instead of talking in the S domain or Laplace domain, we'll talk in the time domain. There's some benefit to doing that, which we'll see throughout the semester. But the section we're skipping in chapter 2 has to deal with how to work with the control system toolbox, how to do some of this block diagram algebra that we've been doing. And that's at least part of what lab zero will be, is modeling a system and doing some of that block diagram algebra with the control system toolbox. So depending on how far we get today, we might push the lab zero due date to the following Tuesday. But I'll let you know, because it's depending on how far we get today.
Lab one, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry about that, lab one, yeah. There's a homework coming up that'll be due, it's scheduled to be due next Friday, right? On the schedule. So it's a lab due this Friday and a homework due the following Friday. Look for an email with an assignment about that. It's gonna be some of the modeling, setting up block diagrams, figuring out transfer functions, that kind of thing, which we'll work through some examples today to help you out with that. All right. So that's where we're going. Today, let's finish off these block diagrams. We start out there. So we started out with one like this, where we had some kind of reference command. And we saw that, hey, maybe we want some other block out here that's not drawn explicitly right now that actually takes my desired system states and acts on them in some way to generate an intelligence reference command, which will represent my R. And that gets compared to some kind of system output. Here, I've drawn that as Y. Look at some error, the controller, in this case a feedback controller, since we have a feedback loop, right, we're feeding back here, acts on that error to generate some kind of input to GP, which is the plant of my system. Remember, plant's kind of from the old chemical process control days. And that takes some input, and that's kind of the model of your actual physical system, generally, is what ends up in that GP block most often. So the one question I want to ask here, we talked, kind of ended the last lecture with saying, hey, there probably should be some block out here to generate R, and we should think about what that reference command should be. So the other piece I want you guys to think about, or a question I want to ask you guys today, should I feed back exactly what I measure all the time? Or can I feed back? Either way. So you're saying, like, I can feedback exactly what I measure. And you're saying I should not.
There's going to be error in your measurements.
There's going to be error in my measurements. That's a good point we want to think about.
GPS doesn't ever tell you.
Yeah, so if you're doing some kind of navigation, GPS, you have meters of error, generally. Other thoughts? Anybody on this side have some thoughts? So I have some system, right? GP is my mechanical system, my physical system. I'm saying, hey, I want to measure that and use some information about how its current state to dictate what the input the next loop needs to be.
So in your R input, you can account for a certain tolerance of error in your measurements, right?
Maybe. So that's also, I mean, if you're talking tolerance of the measurements, that can actually also show up here, depending on what you do. Bigger question, though, and I think you guys are touching on it a little bit. Let's ask it in two different phases. Can I always exactly measure the output of my system? No. And in fact, you can very rarely exactly measure, or depending on your precision, never exactly measure the output that you care about. Right. And not only can you not measure it exactly precisely, sometimes you can't measure it at all. Right. So for the good example of this is like a robotic arm. You almost always care about where the endpoint is in space. You very rarely have absolute information about where that endpoint is. right? You know the joint angles or something like that instead, right? So almost never we're going to be able to measure the state we really want exactly, right? Even to within some kind of precision we guarantee, right? So what happens then is that we have to operate in some way on what we are able to measure. And that can show up in a block like this inside that feedback loop. Which you'll see quite often represented as H when you're inside that feedback loop. And that H, a transfer function that goes there, could be some kind of sensor processing that happens, right? So accelerometer, right? Accelerometer measures really high frequency stuff. They're actually pretty noisy measurements, right? If I know my system is not moving particularly fast, I might want to low pass filter my accelerometer data, right? So you can have some kind of sensor process. I can be doing stuff to Y to make it this part of the feedback loop behave better, right? Or it might be some kind of transfer function that essentially helps me estimate what the real thing I care about is. So I can measure some states, and if I measure those states, I can act on them in some way to get information about the state I really care about and want to feedback. Right? And we'll talk more throughout the semester about kind of how you might do that and what might go in this H, but just be aware that, that's a common structure as well. Right? And just like you don't want to always assume that this is a step input or a ramp or whatever, you don't always want to assume that you can feedback exactly what you need, and because usually you can't. Right. Okay. Let's take 1 minute and we'll kind of get a little bit more practice on block diagram reduction. All right. So let's walk through a couple steps to reduce this block diagram. What's the easiest step we can take right away? Yes. GC and GP, what happens to those? They just multiply, right? So I could pretty easily write this short. Those guys just combine pretty easily. All right. We got a plus and a minus. All right, how do I reduce further?
You could combine H into there as well.
Combine H into there. So how do I? How would I do that? What's E? That, right? Y2 is just H times Y. Right, everybody following so far? So then I know that. Right, so I know that Y is GCGP times E. I found out what E was. Then I just do the math on this guy. Right? And I want output over input, so I want Y over R. Right? So Y get to there, and then I can write Y over R. What kind of transfer function is that for this system? It's a transfer function, right? So output the output over input. Yes, that's right. So this includes all the dynamics of closing the loop. Right? It includes all the dynamics of the feedback control. Right? And in this case, our sensor processing. So this guy is the closed loop transfer function, representing this original block diagram. Okay. Nice little review. But just remember, I mean, this block diagram algebra is just algebra. Right? You just work the blocks, work the branches, and you're good to go. Right? Just straight up algebra. Okay. Let's talk chapter 3. Again, we are skipping right now the last section, essentially, before the kind of examples they give you at the end of each chapter. In chapter 2, we're going to come back to that on Thursday, very likely. So, chapter 3 is all about state variable models. And what these state variable models allow us to do is give a time domain representation of our system. Right? What we've written over here, and we kind of left it out because it's cumbersome to include the S all the time, but these are all in the Laplace domain. These are all in the S domain, right? So we've taken our original equation of motion and transformed them to the Laplace to get to these places. We'd like to be able to, and we'll see it comes up for more complex systems, the time domain is actually easier to kind of stay in rather than go through the Laplace domain and do some analysis on how the system responds. Right? And these state variable models are how we're going to do that. And what we'll see is we get to a form of the equation of motion that is, instead of a transfer function, we get what's called a state-space model. Right? And we look at the states of our system and how and model the system that way. Okay. So the states of our system just represents our degrees of freedom in a lot of ways. Right? So states are kind of variables that we describe the system. To describe the system dynamics, the states exclude out inputs. So the states are kind of the internal structure of your system. Right? These states are usually going to be displacements, positions, velocities for most systems we're going to deal with in here. Right? We'll also see, and we'll actually work an example later today, that these states, there are actually multiple choices of states that will represent the same model. And by choosing the proper representation, you can get to a more intuitive understanding of the model, perhaps. Right? So there's some, that's where maybe some of the artistry of working in the state space domain comes in, and choosing a proper set of states. Just like when you get to, if you're doing any kind of advanced dynamics or vibrations, choosing your frames of reference can have a really impact, large impact on how simple a system is to solve, particularly once you get into three dimensions. A proper choice of states can make your, can simplify the math of your system quite a bit. So I think the easiest way for us to wrap our head around what these states are is to work through an example and look at it in that context. So let's look at as we tend to do, a pretty simple example so we can understand the kind of foundational concepts. We have a mass rolling along the ground, so no friction, and is actually connected to ground. my spring K and damper C. And we have an external force or input of F. Excuse me. So I want to write the state space representation of this system. And really that's just a way to write the equation of motion, an alternative to using the transfer function. So what's my first step?
Free body diagram.
Free body diagram. Yes, sir. What kind of forces do I have acting on this mass?
Gravity.
Normal force, yes.
Spring force.
Spring force. Force from the damper. And the applied input force, F. Okay. So I can write my equation of motion pretty easily then. What's the spring force?
K delta X.
KX in this case, we're measuring X from equilibrium. How about the damper?
CX
dot. Okay, there we go. Equation of motion. We're good to go. All right. What we're going to do is define a state vector. And in all the controls literature, what you're going to see is this defined and called X. I'm going to draw the bar to let you know it's a vector. I know that's a little bit confusing. We have state, we have a kind of degree of freedom in our system that's called X. We're going to have a state vector that's a vector representation of X. Right? So keep those separate. I'm not changing letters because you almost always will see this state vector called X. All right. With the exception maybe being of some of the Jupyter notebooks I have posted already, I do it W to avoid this confusion. But we're going to define a state vector. And this is a vector that's going to contain the states of my system. And we're figuring out what these states need to be. Really, what we're thinking about doing is taking my second order differential equation that represents the equation of motion, and I want to write this as a system of first order differential equations instead. Right. So I'm going to say, in this case, and ask you to just believe me for a minute, I'm going to say the two states of our system, in this case, are going to be X and X dot. All right. And you'll see where this is going, hopefully. And just to make it clear, you'll see those subscripted that way as well. So kind of X1, our first state, is X. X2, our second state, is X dot. All right. So we're trying to get this second order differential equation into a system of first order. So to do so, I'm going to take my state vector, x, I'm going to take its derivative. So I want to write x dot now. All right. I just end up with that, total time derivative of both those states. All right. So looking at that, what is that, the first element of this derivative of that state vector?
The velocity vector.
It's velocity, what is it in terms of my states?
Oh, I don't know. It's your second state.
It's just a second state.
How
All right. What is this? It's acceleration. How can I write the acceleration? We can't. I have this equation of motion, right? If I divide the whole thing by m and collect terms, right, so I took my equation of motion, divided everything by m, and collected all the terms on that right-hand side. Right. So yeah, I have a representation of x double dot that can go in this equation. Right. Well, what's x? Well, it's my first state. X dot's just my second state. So now I've taken my equation of motion, and by representing it by this state vector, written it as a system of first-order differential equations. Okay. So see, I have two first-order. So I have x dot is x2, or x1 dot, same thing. X2 dot is this. So a system of first-order equations that totally describes the dynamics of the system. We'll see that this process of taking a system of second-order differential equations, writing it as a system of first-order differential equations, happens all over the place. When we do a control system analysis, when we do vibration analysis, we almost always want our equations in this form, system of first-order differential equations rather than second. What it's going to allow us to do is leverage a bunch of linear algebra techniques, essentially, to get information about our system. What we'll see is then we write this in matrix form, which we're going to do, that the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of this matrix give us information about the natural frequency and damping ratio of our system. Right. So let's do that. Let's write it in a matrix form now. Excuse me. And I'll kind of go ahead and give you the form that we want this equation to go into. We want to be able to write this equation where we have x dot, where this x is the state vector, equals the sum matrix A times my states, plus sum matrix B times my inputs. All right. So really what I'm looking for here in this case, what are those A and B matrices? All right. So I look back over at my equation I had. What's the first row here? What elements do I need to plug in? What is X2? Right? I take this row, review some matrix math, right? This row times the column, I'll get x1 dot, which is just x dot, right? Is equal to 0 times x1 plus 1 times x2. Does that give us what we had over there? Sure. All right. Do I have any, does f show up in that first equation? Yes? No? Okay. So 0 over there. F doesn't show up in that equation. Well, we look at the second the same way. My second equation is x2 dot equals to minus k over m times x1. Minus c over m times x2. Right? And then I have kind of f over m. Well, I know that I have to multiply 1 over m times f for that second equation. So I've just taken that kind of form we had over there and written it as a matrix. Right, where x dot equals ax plus bu. All right. And again, just kind of as a preview, what we'll see is that I can do a lot of matrix stuff on A and figure out information about my system. I can use these matrices, and what we'll see, a lot of the simulation software, you just don't have to type in the whole equation of motion, you just give it these matrices and away it goes. Right. We're going to be able to design controllers working from these A and B matrices. Right. So being able to put your equation of motion in this form is really powerful. Right. What we'll see about this state, the state space representation, it also extends much better into multi-input, multi-output systems than the transfer function forms do. Right? Transfer function, you have an output over an input. When you start having multiple outputs and multiple inputs, those get a little more complex. Yes?
Where did you get the 0 and 1
for A? So for A, so if I looked at kind of x1, my first state derivative, so the first row over here, was just x2. Right. So if I look, how do I write that in matrix form? I have 0 times x1 plus 1 times x2. Yep. This form, however, like the transfer function form, to get into this matrix form, we're going to have to have a linear system. Right. So even if we had multi-output, multi-input, multi-output, in order to write it in this matrix form, the state space representation, it's going to have to be linear. Right. Because if not, this is a linear operation. We can't handle nonlinearities there. Right. We can also represent our system outputs in a similar way. Things we care about for our system, things we want to measure about our system. So we can write So our outputs, things we want to measure, things we care about our system, are also some combination of the states and input. So for this system, let's kind of figure out maybe what might show up here. What's an output that I might care about for that particular system? X, so the displacement of that mass. All right. So I might have some output I want to be just, in that case, it's just state one. Well, how do I write that in this kind of vector form to figure out what C and D are? Well, it's just that, right? This, I do that math, it just gives me X1. And then there's no input being passed directly to the output. Right? And you kind of work that way. So if I cared about the velocity of the mass, right? Maybe I care about the position and the velocity. Right? Well, then now I have a matrix that would look like that. I have two different outputs that I want to get back. I want to get the position and velocity. I want to get kind of measure of each one of my states in my system if I can. Well, my first output, x1, is just 1 times x1, and 1 times x2 is the second one. And we're still not passing through any of the input. And you could have any kind of linear combination of states as well. So if I wanted the I wanted to operate on the energy or something, and I wanted to get the measure of kinetic energy. Right. I can have some kind of linear combination of outputs here. We're operating on those ones I measure. So these two equations together, really, are what we call the state space form. Right. And really what you're trying to do is write the dynamics of the system, just to review. Write the system dynamics in this vector form, and this is kind of set up as a system of first-order differential equations. Right? To get into this in this matrix kind of vector form, you're going to have to linearize your system, possibly, if it's not already linear. And then by determining those A, B, C, and D matrices, you're going to know the system dynamics. And again, a lot of the control software will just take those as inputs to various functions, those matrices. What we'll also see is this extends out if I have kind of n different states. So let's kind of just map that out really quickly so we kind of wrap our head around it. So let's define a state vector so I have n different states I care about, and depending on your field that's going to vary a lot. Even really simple aircraft models can have hundreds of states you care about. If you're working more higher level control, you might have fewer. If you're looking at continuum vibration and a linearized representation of continuum vibration, you can have hundreds of states. Right, so these vectors can get quite large. So that leads into the other big benefit of this linearized representation is that matrix math is really fast. Right, so if we're able to write our system in terms of these matrices, we can operate on it, we can solve parameters really quickly. So we have n different states. And we have m different inputs. Right? So I'm going to write the state space form of this generic system. Right? I'm going to write x dot, right? What's the size of the A matrix going to be? That's right. It's going to be a n by n matrix. Okay. How about the B matrix? What's its size?
It could be n by 1, or 1 by n.
Not quite. How many? So I have m inputs.
N by m.
Yes, that's right. Because I have to have m going down and then n rows, right? So And those should be B's, sorry, for B matrix elements. Sorry about that. All right. So you can see if I have a large number of states, these matrices get pretty big. But again, luckily that's what computers are really good at working on, is matrix stuff. Yeah.
The top row, is it B N sub N 1?
It's 1M, my bad. So thanks for catching that. Sorry about that. But the larger point here is just realize that these matrices can get quite large. But even when they're large, they're not that hard to deal with. We're not solving them by hand, right? So computer's just going to crush them no matter what. All right. So let's take this and do an example that has a little bit bigger set of state matrices than this guy. Although not all that unsimilar, all that dissimilar. Okay, so I'm going to have kind of similar. This is actually example 3.1 from the book. And we're going to have and to avoid confusion with our state vector, the book kind of recommends a solution that we call these P and Q, the displacement of M1 and M2. And we'll see that this spring is K2. You might see the book tends to use B for these damping coefficients. You'll see that either way. So you'll see some books, some people use B for damping. My tendency is to use C. That's how I learned it. So just know it's the same. All right, so our goal really is to find the state space representation of this system of two masses. And I forgot, there's also a force on this guy. U. All right, so what's our first step? Free body diagrams, yes. Okay, what kind of forces do I have? Gravity. What else?
Your spring and damping force on M2, I say pulling to the left.
Pulling to the left, that's probably how I would draw that one too. Pulling to the right. Could draw it that way. I'm going to suggest we do it this way instead. What else do I have?
Two normal forces.
And what else? One more. Yeah, the applied force, the control force. Okay, so in this case, just kind of walk you through why I drew my arrows the way I drew them. And again, you can draw them however you want as long as you're consistent. In my mind, I fix this guy and push on the other one. And if I do that, which direction are the forces acting? Right, so if I hold this one still and push on M2, right, M1's going to feel a spring force that way. M2 is going to feel it pushing me back this way. Right. And kind of here, I kind of fix everything and move M2. So the wall's fixed. I move M2. He feels the force pulling him back towards the wall. So that's why I drew those that way. Right. But again, draw them however you want. Just make sure your signs are consistent between what you draw and your equations. All right. Okay. So let's figure out what these spring forces are. What is that spring force, given how I've drawn those arrows? It's K something, K1. Well, it can be helpful to write that maybe, right? Where delta 1 is the, right, the force is proportional to its change in displacement. Well, what is the change in displacement of that spring? Yeah, it's going to be some difference between P and Q. Right. So in this case, if it's going to be positive on M1, when F spring magnitude is positive, what do we need the ordering of those two to be? Think about how we held this guy fixed and moved M2 and figured out the force would be pushing that way. So it's got to be that's a positive force on M1. Okay. The trick is you have a spring and damper in parallel, you know it should be exactly the same. Same kind of form, just the derivatives of everything. But you can walk through the same reasoning if you want to figure out the ordering of those guys. Well, the force spring 2 is just K2 times its displacement from its equilibrium. What's that? That's right. All right. Now we have everything we need to write these equations of motion. Let's do that. Not x1 though. Sorry. That's p double dot. In this case, minus sign because we're pointing in negative direction, right? There we have our equations of motion. All right. So we know that we want to write these in some kind of form that's x dot equals some stuff, right? Well, we probably want to go ahead and divide through by m1 and m2 each of these equations, right, to get the acceleration term by itself. Right. So let's do that. And we'll also kind of collect the Q's and P's together. All right. So just divide that whole first equation through by M1. Do the same thing for the second one. And collect some terms. Should be just collecting terms, basically. So I'm kind of getting closer to the form I'm going to need to write this in the state space form. So divide by terms just kind of broke out the individual terms. So then the next question, if we're trying to get into the state space form, what are the states of the system? Velocity of those two, okay. So, kind of our question, we have to ask ourselves, we're getting a state space form, what do we want the state to be? And we have that choice. So, what you're telling me, I think, is that you want P, that to be your states. Did I hear you right? Is that right? Makes sense. OK, if I'm going to write that vector, what order do I want to put these in?
First order.
I need a system of first order equations. What order?
So you have to take the derivative.
Well, I could do that as one choice of a state vector. Could I do this? As a choice of state vector.
Yes.
Yeah. Could I do that as a choice of state vector? Yes? Okay. Yeah, the point I'm trying to make is that you have some control over what these are. Right? So make that a conscious choice when you're mapping out the system. Right? When you're going from some equation of motion, some system dynamics, to your state space representation, take a minute to think, what's a good ordering, what's a good representation of the states? Right? And taking a second to make that choice can make a lot of your work later easier as systems gets more complex, making a proper choice here. So, for example, if I cared a lot about the deflection of the system, like if I was using this to model a flexible solar panel on a satellite, right? This is actually a reasonable model of that, right? I might care a lot about the deflection of that solar panel. If it deflects too much, it's going to break, right? So I might want to make that explicitly one of my states. So you can look at that and try to sometimes map out, what do I really care about? And I actually want that to be one of my states sometimes. Right? But again, the larger point is just take a second to think about what your states are. Right? Is there a convenient representation that might help me? Right? So we are going to use this guy. So up until this point, we matched the book. The book, actually, for this example, uses that one. Okay, so we'll give you kind of, from this point on this problem, we're diverging from the book a little bit, but you'll see the solutions look really similar. And we'll walk through exactly what the differences are going to be. In this case, between these two, it's relatively minor differences. Okay. So again, our goal, we're really trying to get to let's just work on that part of our state space representation right now. So we said that x is that, x dot. And I think the first step, I always do this still, is rather than go straight into the matrix form, just write out the kind of vector form of those equations. All right. So if I can write I have four states. Okay, so I'm going to write, what is P dot in terms of my states?
X2.
Yeah, it's just X2. It's my second state. Okay. What is P double dot?
X2 dot.
It's X2 dot, which is?
That equation divided by mass.
Yes, well, it's this equation. We divided by our mass already. Yeah. Which is, that's why we divided by mass, so it's already in that form for us.
Right.
It's just P double dot. Right. So that's our, essentially that P double dot right there is just our M1 equation of motion. Right. So let's take and write that guy. So I just switched the order to kind of be in the order of our states, if you will, which we'll come back to in a second. I'll do that. So I know P, what is P? In terms of my states. It's just the first state, right? Right? So we know that's just X1. We already figured out P dot was X2. What's Q in terms of my states?
X3.
It's just my third state. Q dot is the fourth state. Okay. So now I've taken that M1 equation of motion and written in terms of my four states. Okay. What's Q dot in terms of my states?
X4.
And I go through the same process we just did for this guy. And I get now I kind of have the vector form of my equation of motion. Right? We've gone from two second-order differential equations to a system of four first-order differential equations. All right. Now I want to write this in matrix form. How do I get there? Well, hopefully I leave myself enough room here. I have some matrix A times my four states. What's the size of our B matrix going to be in this case?
Well, you only have one input, so it would be a 4x1.
Yeah. All right. So our first equation of motion, we're trying to fill out the matrix form. We just have x2, so it's 0 times x1 plus 1 times x2 plus 0 times x3 plus 0 times x4. Right. So first equation, just this times that, it gets me x2, and I have no input being added to that equation. All right, we get to the second equation. It's minus k1 over m1 times x1 minus c1 over m1 times x2 plus k1 over m1 times x3 plus c1 over m1 times x4. All right. How about on the input side? B matrix.
1 over m.
1 over m, right. And now I have that second equation. Kind of filled in the matrix form. All right. Third equation. It's just x4. No input term. Fourth equation, we follow the same process. Oops. Two. There we go. We have our state space form for this system. Okay. If we had chosen how the book chose, what changes over here? Yeah, just the order of those rows, basically. All right, so all the same information ends up being over there. Just the ordering is different. Right? So you end up with a matrix with the kind of zero vectors at the top. Everybody seeing that? Yes? No? Okay. All right. So we have our kind of A and B matrices for the system. Let's go through what some possible outputs might be. What might I be interested in terms of outputs?
Position?
Yeah, the position. So position of M1, position of M2. So I might want to know P and Q. Well, what states are they? It's just x1 and x3 in terms of my states, right? Well, then how do I write this in terms of some matrix time my state vector? Remember, here we're trying to write yep, that's right.
Would it be 0, 0, 1, 0?
Exactly right. Right. Or maybe it's my kind of satellite case and I care a lot about that deflection. So let's say I really want my states to be how do I do that? Well, I just have 1 times x1, 0 times x2. Right. Now I can have an output, a C matrix, right, that represents the displacement between those two masses, the deflection of that satellite array or whatever. And I could add this on if I want. I could have P, Q, and P minus Q as all outputs. Right? And in terms of like kind of our analysis and plotting these things, it doesn't matter. Right? You can essentially have an identity matrix there and just get back all four of your states all the time. Where this will come up is that sometimes the C matrix gets folded into the control design. So you have to write what you're able to measure. You have to write what you're able to feed back in your system in terms of the system states. Right. So if we're able to measure, P minus Q would be kind of easy to measure, usually. Right. That might be the C matrix that I'm able to kind of feed back into my system, if you will. And it shows up in our control design when we get to that a little bit later. All right. Let's maybe do one more quick example. Let's see, what do we want to do? Questions about this so far while I'm erasing?
We are going to see this in the practice application. We're learning how to do this, but we're going to use this to build a control system?
Yes, yes. Yeah, so what we're trying to get through is basically laying the foundation for you guys understanding transfer function, state space, which will lead into, like we kind of talked at the beginning of class today, given this A matrix that describes the system, what can you tell me about it in terms of its response to certain types of inputs, that kind of thing? Or given this transfer function with a characteristic equation that looks like this, what can you tell me about its response? And then how do you control it? So, we're definitely using this stuff. Okay. Let's do another example. Let's see, which one do we want to do? Theta, and we have some torque. So we have here an inverted pendulum attached with the perfect pen to ground, and acting around that is a torque. Right, so we have a motor down here that we can use to kind of balance this guy. So actually a simplified version of one of the systems we'll see in a lab a bit later. Point mass at the end of a massless rigid rod L, deflected from vertical by theta. All right. So where do I start? What's that?
Free body
diagram. Good job. Okay, what kind of forces do I have? What's that?
Gravity.
Gravity is pretty reliable. Reaction forces at the pen, the applied torque. All right. I'm going to write the equation in motion of this guy. What do I want to do? What's kind of next here? Yeah, I want to sum moments around that pen. Why is the pen a good choice? Limitation reactions, and I can. It is an eligible point because it's not moving. So I'm going to draw a frame, x, y, like that, so that then positive z is out of the board. And let's call this guy point O for the origin. All right. Some of the moments about point O, I know right away. I have a positive torque plus R cross F for the gravitational effects. Right? And of course, this little simple one, you can draw your triangles and do it that way if you want. I think this works equally well. I find I'm less error prone when I do the cross product. We have minus minus. Missing something. That's right. All right, so there's our some of the moments. They're all in the k direction. That make sense for this problem? Yeah. They better be all in the k directions if it's going to stay in this plane. All right, what's the other side of this equation? Right, it's technically that change in angular momentum, which for the system is just that, right? In pure rotation, So we have a moment of inertia about 0.0. And it's in the K direction, it's positive. And everything in the K direction as it should be if it's going to stay in the plane. All right. So I have our equation of motion for an inverted pendulum. Is this a linear equation of motion? No. So could we put it in state space form? No, we can't get it to that vector form. You still could write it as a system of first order differential equations, and quite often you still would if you're doing some kind of nonlinear control. But let's linearize. How are we going to linearize this guy? What are our options? What's the first step if we're trying to linearize a system? Yeah, pick the point we're going to linearize about. Well, what's a good point here? Yeah, straight up and down. Right, so we're going to say theta, we're going to linearize around theta equals 0. And furthermore, we're going to say, hey, let's only deviate a little bit from that point. Right, so we're going to say theta is small. Right, well, what does that do to the sine theta? It turns into theta. Okay. We'll just leave it like that for now. All right. Let's take 1 second. Could you write the transfer function for this between input torque and output theta? Stepping back to last week now. What do I need to do to get the transfer function? Laplace transform. Okay. What's the second derivative in the Laplace transform?
S squared.
Right. I want to write the transfer function. It's just output over input, right? So I want theta over t. If I collect terms, then there we go, our transfer function representation of this system. Or one possible transfer function. Of course, I could divide by I naught throughout and get some other stuff. Okay, so there's our transfer function form. Pretty easy to get to. I want to write the state space form. Okay, what's my first choice I have to think about when I'm trying to get the state space? What are the states? What do I want to choose as states? What's the choice here? Theta. I think the pretty obvious choice is, yeah, theta dot. All right. So now I want to write x dot. I'm going to want to write this equation in this form. I'm going to need that eventually, right? Okay, so it's theta dot in terms of my states. Two, that's right. And theta double dot is just my equation over there. So now I have the equations in kind of this vector form. Right? And I want to write it in matrix form. All right, what's my first row? 0, 1. You'll see that's kind of a common theme, probably noticing already. What's the second row? Zero, and then there we go. Now we have a state space form of the same system. And which one you go into is completely up to you in general as a controls engineer. Am I more comfortable working in transfer function form? Does the system lend itself better to those analysis tools? Or am I going to be more comfortable in state space form? We can get to all the same information in both forms, so it's kind of up to you in some sense which way you go for a large number of systems. One other distinction you'll see here is transfer function form is a Laplace domain. You quite often hear this called classical controls. This is kind of pre-space race controls. Early, you know, 50s and 60s. State space grew in proliferation as computational power grew. So we could operate on matrices much easier on a computer than not. So you'll see a lot of the tools we do in those kind of classical controls and the transfer function form for system analysis lend themselves to solving by hand. And then that's because they come from this time before computational power was not really available. Right? Whereas a lot of the state space analysis tools lend themselves to being computationally efficient once you have any kind of computer power at all. So that gets us through state space form. That's our kind of two key ways we're going to represent systems. And we'll see from either one of these, we're going to be able to pick out key system parameters, response characteristics, and then we'll be able to design controllers in both ways as well. So the remainder of the semester kind of picks up on those two paths of control design, analysis and design.
So you're saying we're going to get a lot of exercise doing this?
That's the goal, yeah. Yep. All right, so look for an email about the homework that would be due, and then I'll make a call about the lab in the next couple minutes. All right.